Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the right co-host Dan McKay.
Good morning, everybody.
Senator Dan McKay, and on the left, Shireen Gorbani joins us again from the Salt Lake County Council. And on the left, hi, Shireen.
Hey, happy to be back.
Nice to have you. And you got news on the left this week with some kind of things shaken up on the presidential election. Kamala Harris dropping out.
Yeah.
Was she one of your candidates that you were tracking and liking, or?
Well, you know, I mean, at this point,
She's
one of them.
There's a lot of them.
Appreciating the signs I'm seeing around town that say any functioning adult 2020. I certainly have more. I think at this point, it's good for all of us who are interested in this, whether you are a Democrat or just unhappy with Trump, to be kind of looking at what all the candidates are saying, understanding where they're coming from, what is their vision for this country, and is that somebody that you think you can get behind? I think she had a really interesting central message, which was she wanted to be somebody who was relevant to those issues that keep you up at night. You know, you wake up with that kind of nagging feeling. You're going to be able to pay for college? Are you going to be able to find work that is meaningful? All of those kinds of everyday issues was her bread and butter, and that message just never broke through.
I like, as she announced that she was dropping out, how she basically sent the signal to President Trump. She said, President Trump, I will be spending a lot of time in hearings and I'm looking forward to it or something. Did you hear that, Dan?
See you at your trial.
See you at your trial.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, this time of year, and this is actually pretty typical. Like if you look at previous presidential elections of the party that's not in the office at the time, or when the seat is open and you have two people running, that the Christmas season tends to bring candidates kind of back to the focus of what really matters in their life, and they have to stop and think, am I going to beat myself up against, you know, Black Friday sales and all this other stuff to try and get headlines and try and reverse the trend my campaign is on, or am I going to jump out? And Kamala Harris obviously is, along with a couple of other candidates who have lost track of how many Democratic candidates there are, you know, they're starting to drop out. And I think also the polls are out in the field now, if they haven't already been collected, for who's going to make the next round of debates. And so I think you see Democratic candidates, they may have a hand tip with their own polls.
Yeah.
On where they're at.
And if they don't make it, those debates, they're done.
They're if you were on the stage and then you're off the stage, guess
what? You're done.
Not a good sign.
Yeah, you're done. I want to hear what both of you have to say about Michael Bloomberg entering the race and all these ads we're seeing from Tom Steyer. Am I saying his name right?
Yeah.
Dan, well, real quickly, what do you see there? And then let's ask Shane.
Well, immediately, you know, he starts to run ads and then immediately he's at 5% Bloomberg.
Is polls. He already?
Right.
I haven't seen that.
So it just shows you like advertising does work when you're trying to establish a brand or a name.
To me, it also, well, it also tells me that these candidates are seeing that the Democrats aren't taking enough hold of this race to beat Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, that Bloomberg's jumping in because he thinks he's going to do it and he's targeting the president.
Yes, he's targeting the president. So I think there are some really when we think about what it's going to take to, whether we're talking about rebuilding the Obama coalition or looking at what it's going to take to take back some of the seats that or some of the states that were not won by a Democrat in the last presidential, looking at what's happening with, you know, under enthusiasm with African-American voters, with young voters. I don't see young voters. I don't see people in sort of my sphere here that are, you know, young, energetic Democrats being thrilled about Bloomberg
Michael
or
Bloomberg.
Tom Steyer.
Okay. Interesting.
And they're not going to go out and knock on doors and they're not going to work for it. And I think that's a really, that's troubling to me, especially when so much of their future is on the line.
What if Bloomberg's paired with Buttigieg or Bloomberg's, you know, paired with Cory Booker? Does that change it for the younger vote?
Yeah. So I've been surprised that Cory Booker hasn't caught on more because, again, I think he's got a really compelling message about unity, a real positive message. I think he might be able to pull some of that together. I think Buttigieg is suffering from some of the same problems. I don't think young people are very excited about him. Some are. But he's also, as you've seen, the information about how he's doing with African-American voters, it's grim.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan, I'm curious what you're thinking. It's just interesting how it's kind of coming out that the Romney is, you know, making his case that Ukraine didn't have any influence on our presidential elections, and he's speaking out again, once again.
Yeah, that's helpful, right? I was reading and I'm trying to remember where the article is posted so that you can go find it. I'll put it in the links. I read an article recently about money that has been spent since the 1950s by the United States directly trying to influence outside elections. Mm-hmm. And I printed the document out so that I could, you know, have it handy. It's a four-page,
wow.
You know, two lines per election type of commentary. So
saying we do it, why is it wrong?
Well, yeah, I love the hypocrisy that now Congress wants to talk about because they appropriate the money for interfering in elections internationally all the time. So interestingly now, Congress wants to make this an issue. Fine. I guess maybe their constitution don't say it, so it makes it okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
But when you see Senator Romney coming out and defending the president and by saying, hey, Ukraine didn't interfere. And so to me, I think if I was the Democrats, and you see this today, and you started to see some of the run for the exits for the Democrats trying to find a safe spot at the end of these hearings that doesn't end with the word impeachment, because they're going to find out just how motivated Donald Trump's base is when they start talking about impeachment during the election year next year.
Yeah, interesting.
So Senator Harris, I know, I appreciate what she said about being in all of Donald's hearings. My bet today, if I had to guess right now, no hearings in the Senate. I think there'll be a censure or they'll find yeah. some way out of it, one. But, you know, all that being said, this thing is still a freak show, and I still have watched none of it.
I'm afraid that what you're detracting from here is that there is serious concern and misinformation around Ukraine's role and actually lack of role in terms of interfering our election, which is an effort that has been brought forward by Russians. And I think that is a really troubling element of what had happened in 2016. We should all be worried about it and working vigorously to address it coming to this election.
Shireen, I'll bet that you were as horrified as I was when you saw that there was some more NATO meetings coming together and that the leaders of the free world were going to be together. And here comes Donald Trump, enter stage right. And the Prime Minister of Canada and with the others from France, I don't know if Germany was there. I know that UK was in the circle, but they were caught speaking about Donald Trump and a microphone caught what they were saying. And they were basically, you know, talking about how the staff of the president is just horrified by what he does.
Yeah.
So they could see it in their body language, their jaws drop.
Don't miss the context of it.
Okay.
Right? So the context, you know, Prime Minister Trudeau was asked about it, and he was talking about that his staff just dropped when the president recommended in a meeting with the G7, as they were trying to discuss where their next meeting would be. You know, the president said, well, we can have it at Camp David or we can have it at Mar-a-Lago. And those were, suggestions that were made in the meeting. And he said his campaign, so his staff's mouths dropped at that time.
Yeah.
And that was in reference. So I kind of put that a little bit into some context.
It's helpful context. But, I know sure as living, just like most of the world, the watching how Donald Trump conducts himself and his behavior, his language, his style.
With global leaders.
It really,
Canada.
It's something different.
They have one Marine and they have a couple of BB guns. Here's the problem. You have Canada, standing up there, just safe of the 48th parallel, living the dream, and they are, this is the thing that caused Justin Trudeau's comments, and the president highlighted it perfectly. They are paying less than their, quote, share. They're supposed to be contributing 2% of the military effort to NATO's efforts, right, in peacekeeping throughout the world. And Canada is not, contributing. And the president has consistently throughout this been calling out states, nation states, for their deficiencies. And they're calling out, for the lack of academic rigor. They're just on NATO like crazy. And so it doesn't surprise me to see the prime minister act somewhat aggressively backwards toward the president. But notice that he's focusing on a mannerism of the president, much like the Democrats frequently get distracted by, and not the policy. Because the fact of the matter is, Canada is a freeloader.
Just in the political center, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, they could be making all those points about Canada and doing it in in a way that I respect.
That's one of the issues that I have, and I know many people are concerned about this, is just the overall lack of decorum, the sense that we've lost our seat in leading on these big, important conversations because our president is not taken seriously. And that is because of his behavior, because of things that he says, the way that he acts. And it's a problem for all of us.
Yeah. Dan, just
in
please
that our economy is rocking and everything's really going well.
Please tell me when you hear that the G7 is meeting, don't you know there's going to be trouble?
Sure.
With our president?
Not with our president. I just know there's going to be trouble. At the end of the day, the G7 itself is a group of very powerful nations, financial wealth, and institutions who all have their own agendas.
Yeah.
And it's usually protect their own bottom line and their own borders. And for some reason, we have a president who joins those meetings with the same agenda, and it offends everybody on the Democratic side.
We're going to have to talk more about that. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Dan McKay and Shireen Gurbani. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gurbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I want to try something on this side of the program and do a little bit of rapid fire. So we've got lots of issues, okay? And I'm just going to, so we're going to.
I'll put on my flak jacket.
Okay, put it on.
How many times are you going to say Trump during rapid fire?
I got a list of local issues. So the first one, just want to talk for a minute about the budget surplus, Dan. So we've got tax reform going on. The legislature talking about an $80 million income tax cut, and they're learning that we've got more money coming. How's this playing on Capitol Hill?
Again, the surplus doesn't surprise us. At the end of the day, we still know income. We still know jobs. We're still increasing that way. And so we're still seeing that money grow.
Does it make it harder or easier for tax reform? Like if you have a lot of money, it seems like, oh, we're doing fine.
I think it's...
It also lets you give a larger tax cut.
Yeah.
I think it's harder for the public to understand.
Yeah, okay. I think that's fair for Shireen. Everybody sees from the outside, they see they have money. So why should they need to do anything differently? Because there's money, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And one is because we have the constitutional earmark. One is because
sales tax is being upended.
For years, sales tax was growing in the order of, 5 and 6%. Now we're seeing it between 4 and 5%. Mm-hmm. That's $100 million mm-hmm. or so. Mm-hmm. And so you start looking at some of those numbers from a predicative standpoint, and we're just doubling down on showing the fact that one, nobody understands why we're doing tax reform, Natalie. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about this for, I don't know, I think the first time I saw a presentation with you doing it, giving a presentation on tax reform and some of those things, mm-hmm. it had to be 10 years ago.
Interesting.
And so the public does not get it. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if we're in a shortfall or if we're in a surplus.
Shireen, do Democrats get it?
No. Okay. I mean, so okay.
Do they understand why people who are very close to the state budget and who are, really looking after the state's interests want to do something to better align the economy with growth and revenues?
Yeah. So the
better align the revenues with the growth in the economy.
The House Democrats did do, they went out and did some workshops. They did some listening tours. I think one of the things that's been difficult, and as you mentioned, people, just your average everyday person who looks at this sees you got all the money. What's the issue? And I think for so many people, understanding the imbalance, mm-hmm. understanding kind of that, the structural imbalance that we got big issues, it doesn't resonate for most people. And I don't think that a compelling argument has been made.
So I want to try, but I don't want to talk too much. But in a down economy, it gets really hard.
Totally
we
agree.
Aren't able to fund growth in, student growth in education. Yeah. So right now we have a very good economy. And so the saying is, fix the roof when the sun's shining. So these are legislators that instead of kicking the can down the road, which would be the easiest thing to do, they're saying right now, let's try and do some meaningful reforms.
Yes.
Three things to remember. Population's aging. As people age, they spend differently. They spend on healthcare, which isn't taxed. Services, growing like crazy. We don't tax most services. And then the third one, healthcare is growing as a percent of our economy. We don't tax it.
Yeah.
Those three things are the structural trends that are forcing us to reform our taxes.
And I think
Dan's a tax guy, so we got to hear from him. But
yeah, that core message, the clarity of that is lost on most people. Mm-hmm. It just is.
Okay, Dan.
And it doesn't matter what we do to change. It doesn't matter how long we take. There are some on both sides of the aisle who are complaining that we're rushing this, we're mm-hmm. making these changes. We've been talking about these tax inequity problems inefficiencies at least,
sure.
for at least 10 years that I've been in the legislature.
Because the service economy has been growing and growing and growing, and we don't tax most services.
Yeah, but I fundamentally think if we took another year, no change. Mm-hmm. If we took another year after that, No change. The only thing we would do is we would risk being on the other side of the sun shining and therefore not in a position to make changes.
Well, I'll just make one other thing, and you guys mentioned this, but a surplus, it makes the message confusing. Because why do you have to change taxes? And I just want people to understand that when we have a surplus, what that means is the economy performed better than we thought, right? Because a surplus is a prediction. So when they meet in January, they'll be appropriating monies that don't start until July 1 and go for 12 months. So you're like 18 months out on projected revenues. Anyway, when the economy grows, guess what happens? Government has to service it.
Yeah.
It's more roads. You know, it's more demands on education, in migration. And so to me, what a surplus means is we've got to pay for more things.
Yes. Yeah.
It's only a surplus because we misforecasted it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, what's interesting
forecast
is,
error.
And what's interesting about that element is this is super wonky internal forecasting conversation, which is, if you're with us still, hats off to
you.
Bless you.
Thank you.
But I will say that that kind of wonky conversation is really lost on most, one. And it's really hard to really dig into the details to try and figure out, well, what's the right lever to push? And we have looked at lots, and we can look at more. And certainly everybody doesn't want their ox to be gored. I get all of that. What I don't know is, if the legislature comes together on December 12th and passes a tax reform bill, will the voters say, oh, okay, maybe they studied it long enough and they pass it? Or will the voters say, you know what, out with the bums? And that's very possible. I'm just glad I'm not up for re-election next year.
Yeah. Okay. I mentioned we were going to go rapid fire, and we did some lot of detail there, but we covered a lot of points. Shireen, Salt Lake County property tax increase. How big is it? Is it a done deal at this point?
Yeah, so it is, when we look at what's happening across many municipalities, in fact, I don't know if we'll talk about Utah County, which is actually almost doubling their tax rate. We were able to come in at Mayor Wilson proposed 8.7% increase, which on an average home in Salt Lake County ends up being about, it's under an additional $40 a year. So those dollars really, there's a lot of confusion. And I will say the thing that was so striking to me, we had our public hearing last night, and individuals came down, and I would say the thing that's striking to me is, as much as we want to talk about how our economy is booming, how things are going so great in Utah, there are a lot of families that are living close to the edge. And one of the things that I hope people will hear and think about as this is coming forward, and this is for all residents of Salt Lake County, we have programs to help people that are through our treasurer's office that can help with property taxes, managing that, some relief that we offer. And many people don't know that exists. But we heard public comment for about an hour and a half, and a number of people talked about the struggles they have as retirees or people who are dealing with complex medical problems. And thinking about what's happening for those individuals in our community is something that weighs on me heavily. What I also know is that we're losing our employees in our jail. We're having a hard time staffing. We've got an aging population. As you mentioned, we run adult and aging services, helping
increase costs.
Increase costs, helping to keep people in their homes.
How long has it been since a property tax increase?
We have not increased taxes in Salt Lake County since 2013. And I hope that, I understand that it's difficult for people. And I also know that we provide a huge service to this community. Mm-hmm. And often a lot of that's lost. Almost 88% of our general fund budget goes to public safety.
Wow. Dan,
so can you imagine
if
all of your public safety dollars were tied up in a different account and you couldn't use it? Can you imagine what that would do? That'd be ridiculous for the county to have that proposal, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be ridiculous to not be able to cover one of your core functional services?
Dan, you got to tell our listeners what that means.
So that's the thing. I actually don't think many people listening have any idea why you're making that point.
So the big point is, constitutionally, we lock all of our income tax money into our right pocket. And you can't use it for any of the needs over in the left pocket, like Medicaid or transportation. Mm-hmm. So we're handcuffed. And in when the market, going back to Natalie's comments, when the market is really good, our income tax always surges, and sales tax usually does also, but it's falling. And so the problem is that falling sales tax revenue is hurting our ability to provide for public safety, because that is part of the general fund money as well, provide for roads, provide for all those things. And yet We are locked with our right pocket full and our left pocket slowly with a hole in the bottom of it.
I think that there's a bigger issue.
And the
happening.
Democrats want to stick it to us like we're just trying to ruin people's lives.
I don't think that's the case. And what I'll tell you is I think that there's a bigger issue in the public that says, I look at my state legislature that has undermined my votes repeatedly on things like Prop 2, Medicaid expansion, thinking, you know, concerned about what's going to happen with better boundaries, fair redistricting. There's a gap of trust that has been created. And I think the public generally is very worried about what's going to happen with tax reform because there has been this fraying of trust with what it is that you're doing and how it is that you make promises that are or are not delivered on.
I'm going to give us an easier topic. falling fertility rates. And the news.
Hey, I'm doing my part.
You are, Dan.
Six
with
kids.
Six kids.
Yeah, no.
So I'm pretty close to this data. So we have 2018 data now that shows the total fertility rate. So it's age-specific, you know, fertility rates. It's basically births per woman. Yeah. And so you have to have 2.1 fertility rate to replace the parents to the next generation because of infant mortality. It's not two. Mm-hmm. And Utah just fell below 2.1. I never thought it would happen in my career. Mm-hmm. We now have North Dakota, South Dakota, and Kansas with higher fertility rates than Utah.
Wow.
Wow. Quick reaction, Shireen and Dan.
Well, I was a North Dakotan before being a Utahn, so I'm surprised to hear that. It's interesting to think about.
It's teen pregnancies, I'll just
I was gonna
give
say,
you that.
Yep, that doesn't feel good.
I mean, that's the part that's unusual.
Yes. So one of the things that I think is interesting about that is a lot of I think some of people's frustration about what's happening in particular in Salt Lake County around the way our community is changing is tied to growth. And to know that so much of that growth is internal is a difficult one to balance, right? People, you know, are worried about more housing. They're worried about density. They're worried about some of these issues. But we're the ones often, having these large families or bringing more people into our community by growing our families. So it's interesting, and it'll be interesting to see what happens as that shift is changing. And it really is people moving here or, you know, some of those dynamics shifting. It'll change the dynamics of this county.
Dan, I'm on record as saying that this will do more, lower fertility rates will do more to help with per pupil funding than any special interest group
or
elected official.
Or anything else will ever make a difference.
We're going to have fewer kindergartners.
That's right. Fewer people.
Each
money
year.
Goes further.
It's accumulating because we've been having falling births. This is the, I'm forgetting the number. I think it's like the 11th consecutive year of a falling fertility rate. It
so
started to
about,
fall as we went into the downturn.
So talk about
and
the
then
negatives.
It just kept going.
So talk about the negatives, though, of a falling fertility rate, right?
Yeah.
When you drop below replacement, you know, in the past, employers, when they've been looking from out of state at states that have positive fertility rates, they're looking at replacement ability of the workforce. And when you start to see a drop in that replacement rate, you start to see the inability to replace the workforce, and then you become reliant on in-migration,
which is immigration. Immigration. And the workforce issue is one we're already experiencing here.
Yeah.
In our trades, in many of our really booming areas of the economy, we are not able to find enough tech workers. We're not able to find enough teachers. We're not able to find enough electricians or plumbers to do the work that needs to be done in this community already.
Yeah. Well, hey, we've covered a few issues, but we need to go to gripes. Dan, do you want to go first?
Absolutely.
He's going to have a gripe
No, I don't. Honestly, when I look around our community and see things that are going on, my gripe today is about the trucks on the highway that are, one, hanging out in the left lane. Mm-hmm. So get out of the left lane. And two, they're not cleaning off their trailers. And as a result, I'm getting more rock chips now than I probably ever have before.
It's a booming construction sector.
Just driving me nuts.
Yeah.
If you're seeing
more of those trucks on the road, there's a reason.
Yeah. So there you go. Anyway.
It was the fastest growing major industry last month, construction. Yeah. So, Shireen, your gripe.
So my gripe has to do with the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services proposal to increase the application for citizenship from $1,200 to $2,195. So for a person, my father became a citizen, and I know when that happened, it was, you know, complicated. You got to get a lawyer. The fees and services that are associated with that can be a real barrier for working families. Right now, people can give public comment on that proposal, and so I would suggest looking into it. You can go to the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services website and provide comment if you think an increase of almost 80% is a bit much.
Yeah, interesting. I'm going to go with the LDS Church taking a position on the Equal Rights Amendment. And I may offend some of my friends and colleagues that work in public affairs for the LDS Church, but I'm a member of the faith. The prophet Joseph Smith said, give people correct principles and let them govern themselves. Am I saying it right, Dan?
Yes, ma'am.
And I just think, you know, let the public decide how they feel about the ERA and why does an organized faith have to have a position on it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Big gripe. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm glad to have been joined by Dan McKay and Shireen Gourbani. Any last quick holiday wish?
No. Oh, wish? No. I was going to support Shireen because at the end of the day, you realize increasing the fee for the immigration service, most, 28% of Americans have zero in savings.
Yeah.
So they couldn't even apply for citizenship if they needed to. Anyways.
It's doubling on with the gripe.
Look at that common ground.
The program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Hey, thanks for listening.